There is a podcast brewing that's about to take over podcasting for good. The only podcast that you are going to need to tune into day in, day out, is the Member Guest Podcast.
If I can hit it down the middle of the fairway, that's great. But again, with the driver right now, the driver sucks.
John Daly, and you're listening to the Member Guest Podcast. Rip it.
In studio, Mr. Tyler Fitzel. Your audio's good. You can hear me?
Phenomenal.
Everything's great?
Absolutely.
The Cava de Oro's good?
That is beyond good. I love a tequila. There's a lot of things that I like in a liquor form. And good whiskey is always good. A good tequila. They got to be good. And what makes them good is just that you can savor that flavor. You can handle that.
And that one's good.
Well, it is. It's extra añejo. And as I mentioned to you earlier too, is like some of the clear stuff, the Cristalano stuff is just extra añejo that they filtered out, right? That's one of the brands. There's all sorts of brands you can get that way. And that's what this tastes like.
Mm. It's like syrupy. I like the sweetness of it and the smoothness.
Yeah.
And people, I feel like if you poured it and then people drank it, they wouldn't even be able to tell you it's a tequila.
No, it has.
If you're just a casual drinker, well, you know, yeah. You wouldn't be like, that's not tequila.
Right.
That doesn't burn going down.
No, exactly. Well, and that's the thing, you know, you hear talk about drinking and you hear your buddy go, oh my gosh, I can't do tequila. Well, then you haven't had a good one.
Yeah, you haven't had a good one.
And then it's no different than whiskey.
We could turn this into a tequila podcast.
Oh, man. Well, let's not. That's yes, we could. But
it came and gone. It took like 2 minutes to decide we're not going to do that.
Okay.
Yeah. I had your friend Aaron Roth on, so we've talked from folks from Second Swing before, and I was actually reminiscing before you came on today about the first time that we ever met. Do you by any chance recall it?
Oh, of course.
Do you really?
Oh yeah.
At the Minneapolis store.
Yep.
In the tour van bay, you know, it's outside. I don't know what the Minneapolis store looks like today, but I know you used to have to like walk outside and go next door. Yep. And go in there. And, I'll never forget it. You were like, you don't need new clubs. You need a lesson. And I was like, well, can I pay you for a lesson? And we just kind of like did a little stuff there. And then I think from then, that's when I got like hooked on Second Swing. And now I'm probably a top, I don't know, 50 customer in the world, I'd say.
Better,
maybe 20?
Better
10? There's a lot of prossers out there.
Well, by the way, we saw him today. We saw him.
I haven't seen him in there in a while, but I did see his new ferals that he got on his PXG blackout wedges. Yeah. It was kind of like Viking themed.
Right.
And I was like, these have to be prossers. And I sent him a picture and he's like, those are mine.
Exactly.
Yeah, there's a lot of prossers out there. I'd like to think I'm top 20 second swing customers.
I think I saw some Circle T putters though with square head covers.
You did.
I did.
Those were mine.
Oh,
so they are mine. Yeah. So
was I supposed to bring them to you?
No. I actually brought them back today. So I'm, I made a bet with Andy on one of our last podcasts that I'm not allowed to change my bag, at all this year.
Okay.
And the rule is if I do, I don't get to trade in my previous, you know, what I would currently be using.
Yeah.
I have to give it to him. I effectively can't trade anything in. Like I would lose the value. I just have to give it to him.
That would be expensive.
And so what I'm doing is I'm getting rid of, you know, as you can probably tell, there's been a lot of stuff in the garage in some way, shape or form. I've got my two sets now and I'm trying to dial in the final bag for the year.
Yeah.
And so that I'm not tempted to you know, play other stuff. I was bringing those back to Travis because he said Meat Sauce was interested in some, you know, cool putters.
Yeah.
So I was like, hey, I got some tour only stuff. Like if he wants to see those, text him, I'll bring them in for you.
Yeah.
And I'll let him look at the Bettinardi stuff that I got too. Cause I got a bunch of Bettinardi putters. So that's kind of like my in to try and get Meat Sauce on the podcast as well.
Well, that isn't hard. If you just, I fit him a couple weeks ago, it hasn't come out yet, but we did a fitting.
Yeah.
And,
he was like a PXG guy, wasn't he?
Yeah.
He was kind of like pseudo, like when he was getting into golf. And I think like everyone else, he realized, hey, I want to play a bunch of different brands. And
The reality is like, who's okay. So yesterday, Kirk Cousins signs with Atlanta.
Sure did.
The future is the future. We don't know what it is, but I will say this, because everyone could kind of commonly agree. Kirk Cousins has made a lot of money
mm-hmm.
and he's going to make a lot more.
Sure is.
And, you know, like we look at where the Vikings were kind of, we talk about prices. We talk about like how much could they offer, guaranteed, how many years, et cetera. No one was going to offer as much as Atlanta offered, and they offered a lot.
Yeah, I didn't even see the contract details because I'm a Packer fan, and I've kind of gone deaf to the notion of the Vikings trying to figure out a quarterback situation.
Right.
So I haven't paid too much attention, but if I were to add in my 10 cents, it would be the Vikings need to draft a quarterback because I think the last, call it like 4 or 5 real quarterbacks they've had have all been the same story of like a Kirk Cousins over and over. It's been, you know, sign a guy who's coming out of his first contract or whatever, give him some quarterback money and try and like revive his career. You know, it was like Sam Bradford. They did it with Sam Bradford.
Yeah.
Kirk Cousins. I can't even remember the guy's name. That was from Tampa. That I think had a really short stint with you all for maybe a season, but
even well, to talk about that, let's loop this back. Cause Bradford, we had to, Teddy went down and we
oh, that's right.
But,
yeah, that's right.
But Meat Sauce is a little bit like Kirko, right? If you're going to give him something, he's going to take it. And we're good with that.
Yeah.
And Atlanta gave him $100 million. The Vikings maybe could have done 50, maybe, right? Why would you turn it down? And so
you wouldn't. This is the exact same stance that I don't understand why people didn't take this stance with Liv in the PGA. And like Dustin and Cam and Brooks all said it the same way. They were like, you know, for all the casual fans out there, if you had a job and somebody offered you to work less and make more, would you take it?
Right.
And like, I would say 95% of people are going to say yes.
Well, John Rahm was in an interview and that's what he said, a couple weeks ago?
Yeah.
He said, listen, when I came to this point,
it's a no brainer.
Yeah. It's just like, I can provide for my family. I have a large amounts of money. I can still play in the majors.
I was going to say winning the Masters helps, right?
Well,
like
it does, but like you got take. Well, what about Brooks Koepka?
I mean, he's won every major. He won the British?
I think so. Correct.
That's because he's won the Masters.
Yes,
he's won the U.S. He won the PGA last year.
Has he won the Masters? No.
He's won the Masters.
No.
Mm-mm. Stop. Really?
No.
He hasn't won a Masters. Is that what he was chasing last year?
So he's got 4. What has he got? A U.S. Open?
It must be U.S. Opens and PGAs then.
Then PGAs. Well, he won back-to-back PGAs.
Did he win the U.S. Open or the PGA last year?
PGA.
That, which is also wild. Because he was at the Masters. That's right. He was chasing it. Rahm ended up winning, and then he ended up winning the PGA.
Yeah.
A few weeks later.
He went back-to-back in U.S. Opens, then back-to-back in PGAs. So he's got, I'm pretty sure. But either way.
Regardless.
Well, it's the amount, like I said, it's the amount of money. And he was coming off an injury with his knee and just basically kind of looked at it. He said this in interviews. I don't know if I'm going to be able to continue to do this. And if I can, this might be the best way to start with that. I think given the history of the game of golf, I don't know that there's regrets, but I'm sure there's second thoughts.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like anything, right? Like you almost get a little bit of buyer's remorse, right? At some point it's going to hit you a little bit. And I remember when I was watching Full Swing last year, you could see it kind of hit him. Like, I don't think he regretted it. He was just like, I miss the competition. I miss the guys. I miss playing with the best in the world week in and week out. Cause he's playing against decent competition, but there's just, you can't match up against the depth of the PGA Tour field. So Meat Sauce started that whole conversation.
And you know what? It was a great time. We had a lot of fun. We're getting him into the game. He's growing in that. He's got more
experience.
Sounds
like he loves it.
Oh, he does. He does.
Does he ever play with Common? Because Common plays every day. Well,
I've played with Common. I know Common and know.
Already hit it on one.
Yeah. Down the middle. What was your second shot? You know, that kind of thing. The funny Common story is a couple of years ago, I was in a qualifier for the State Am, MGA State Am, and I'm paired up with Common, and I've known Dan for a while. So it's not a big deal. Like I like playing with him, and he's the same way he is behind the mic is the same way he is just in real life,
which is the best. And that's how you like, I've heard Meat Sauce is that way too, that he's just very, he's out there. He'll talk as long as you let him talk. Very social, nice guy. The guy that does my taxes so happens to be his cousin, and he's been trying to help me get him on the podcast for a while. And then all of a sudden, you know, Travis you know, was like, hey, if you got some putters, Meat Sauce is looking for some. Yeah. So I'm surrounding him with all of these people that are like, hey, you should go on this random podcast that you probably haven't heard about. Right. So we're going to get him on.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
I'll bring him out to Windsong. He'd like that. We should go play with him.
Yeah. I never worry about like where I play. Like I always kind of look at the game as I've grown in this game for a long time about who you're playing with. And that's what it comes down to.
100%.
You know, I'm going to have days where I'm going to hit the ball solid or better than other days when I don't. And I'm going to have good putting days. I'm going to have good wedge days. Well, I always have good wedge days. My wedges are
the wedge magician.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can find him on Instagram at the wedge magician.
You can look me up. I think the wedge is really what I gravitate towards is that there's another story in that, but how I got to that and claim that name was a lot more about the idea of like, I'm just going to try this shot. And
get crafty.
That's what it is like you wedges are difficult because they're not just like a set full swing type.
Yeah.
We talk about all the time. Someone will come in for a fitting and it's just like, I need 100-yard club. And I'm like, I got six of them and I can, you know, I have six different clubs. I can hit 100 yards. Yeah. Did you tell me how you want to get it there and what you want me to do with it?
It's really funny you say that because so I talked to JP today, JP Wedge.
Yep. Good buddy of mine.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. You had introduced us.
Yeah.
And man, he's done some really cool things over the years. And it was awesome to hear his story. Shameless plug, that podcast will probably come out next week after this one. I think this one will come out this week or one of the two. Maybe his will come out this week. I don't know.
Yeah.
But we were talking and I kind of had this long-winded question as I was almost trying to figure it out myself, which was, you know, when you're doing a wedge fitting, it's got to be different for you as somebody who makes wedges, knowing that it's quite literally a club that you use from 10 feet to 130 yards.
Correct.
Right. And it's a lot different than a 7, 8, or 9 iron where, you know, obviously you can play different types of shots, but generally speaking, you're talking about your 150, your 170, yeah, your 190 yard clubs.
Yep.
And we just started to get into the grinds and the way that he thinks about creating like a wedge and just all that type of stuff. And it was fascinating to think about because, you know, when I go in and do wedge fittings, I'm like, I probably know the least about wedges. I know a lot about drivers cause I've gone through a lot of them over the years.
Yeah.
But when it comes to wedges, there's just so many different aspects with loft lie, grinds, the way that they feel, the way that they dig, the way that they do, you know, all these different things. And, we had a really good conversation about it.
I had a fitting the other day with wedges and I turned to the gentleman and I said, you know, we've gone through a lot of this stuff and he's got a lot of questions, which is great. And I said, is there a slight bit of confusion kind of with all this information? He's like, yeah. And I said, blame that on the golf company. I mean, it's not on me. The companies themselves have so many different letters and so many different numbers and so many different things that they're pushing out. When I'm only guessing this, I'm predicting that JP talked about the leading edge and the camber on the bottom.
100%.
And those,
you got it.
But listen, at the end of the day, I've been fortunate enough to sit down and have a conversation and get fitted by Bob Boelke. Great guy. But we're talking about the same things. How do you use leading edge and what kind of grind, in other words, the camber on the bottom, what kind of curvature is it? What kind of angles does it carry? And how do you want to use that?
And is it like when you get fit by somebody like that, so like a quite literally a master of their craft?
Yeah.
Is it just to the point that it's not that they're making it confusing because there is obviously something behind what they're doing,
yes,
and the reason why they're doing it. But for the, call it average player, it probably doesn't matter as much, right? Like when you're fitting pros, you know, you got your T grind and your F grind and your S grind for different courses and grasses.
Yeah.
And
I think professional, well, first and foremost, professionals basically use the same thing every time. There's only one time that a professional might change, and that's generally Augusta. That's it.
Really?
Yeah. They're going to
even change. Like when you go from like playing in Arizona,
yeah,
and on different grasses, yep, really, they're, yep, still going to use the same wedges.
Yeah. Because number one, they have a particular way that they want that to operate. They want that to work. And actually a great video JP has on his new JP camber wedge is you go look at the video that he's got and you talk about like the actual impact. You talk about the ball coming through and the dirt, the grass and the dirt and everything flying. They're going to do the same thing no matter where they are, partly because every single course they play has the same sort of condition.
Yeah.
What really gets a little bit tricky is like if you do have a really different grass, I get that. Or if you talk about the grain of the grass, like Florida is a bit more Bermuda type.
Or conditions, right? Yeah, like if you're playing in a wet state versus a fast and dry state, right? Correct. I imagine that matters.
It does, but it does in your approach. So it's how you use the club, not the club.
More the technique, more the type of swing.
We talk about, we talk about putters and that's a whole nother world. For a golf company, there are two clubs where there are so many choices that it becomes confusing, and that's in wedges and putters.
Yeah.
So now, but if you think about this, you go to a driver, what have they done in a driver right now?
We talk about like the 10K MOI stuff, which is basically putting weight in the back of the head as opposed to different areas of the driver to get that, you know, spin and get that moment of inertia over the 10,000, whatever the metric is.
Yeah. And so if you look at, they've got usually three versions. Possibly four. Every company's got about three or four versions.
Of a driver. Oh, yeah. Can I try and guess them? Low spin.
Yep.
Low spin driver.
Mm-hmm.
Max forgiveness driver.
Yep.
Probably like a high launch driver.
Not necessarily.
Don't they want to try to get players to get it in the air, or is that more shaft?
Well, that's just more loft.
Okay.
That's all loft. We can get into that one. That's another one.
Okay.
But you're right.
I've got two.
You got two. There's just the general kind of straightaway, I'm going to hit a driver.
Stock driver.
Bingo. And then there's a maximum draw driver for our slicers up.
Oh, a max draw driver. Do they just shut the face on those?
Sometimes they do that in the way.
Is that like twist face technology type stuff?
No, they do more so in the offset of the shaft itself. So it's where it enters. But so now let's talk about that, right? In wedges and or even putters, you have so many different styles. So let's talk about wedges for a second. You got about 30 different wedges. But that's because you have a 46 and a 48 and a 50 and a 52 and you start going through the lofts.
Yeah.
And they're going to use some bounce angles and grinds on some lofts, but not others because of the performance aspect.
And because of how you use them, right? Like a 58 and a 60, you're going to have high bounce options where you're not going to get that on a 48.
Correct.
Or 50.
A 48 is just a 48 essentially.
Yeah. Because it's basically a higher lofted pitching wedge.
Bingo. And so like even at Titleist as an example, they're the number one wedge, right? Vokey is the number one played. It's the number one sold. So on the market side of it, people come in all the time and are like, they're very confused about all the different letters.
Grinds. And
But the reality is, how do you use a leading edge? And then how do I need to make that bottom work for you the way that you use the leading edge? So we talk about JP's camber. Well, the interesting part about the camber is that there's heel and toe relief. There's trailing edge relief. There's the leading edges coming in. He has a more rounded design where some other wedges, not all, but some other wedges have a very flat bottom. Well, the flat bottom can react one way because it's flat. A rounded edge can react differently on how you use it.
Mm.
So
what you're saying is now clicking, like it was making sense when I was talking to him about it, but I wouldn't say we talked about specific examples like that. Mm-hmm. I was just telling me about the new wedge that he made. It was kind of as we were wrapping up the episode. And now hearing you talk about it and how it plays and what it means makes a lot more sense in my mind. And that's also probably the hottest 15-minute intro. Like, I didn't even do justice on why I have you on the podcast.
Not yet.
But I think people will now understand, and I for better or for worse, will realize how I got sucked into this rabbit hole of golf. It was when I first walked into Second Swing and met you and probably had a very similar conversation. And I had that moment of, I know nothing about anything when it comes to golf. And if I want to get to where I want to be, I need to understand this stuff. Well,
part of it is like, this goes for anyone watching this, listening, et cetera. You are where you are. It's not about what you don't know. That's okay. If you haven't learned it yet, that's fine. Like there's so many things in this world that we have never learned and or never will.
Like what's at the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah. We've been there though. Pretty much.
Have we?
Yeah. Not really. Oh. Well, you think about it from this perspective, like in equipment, there are so many choices. And so that's where you talk about a fitting. Why would you get a fitting? Now you know that your fitting is the best option, because we're going to be able to look at what works best for you.
And across all manufacturers, right? I mean, that's another massive thing that I think is very underrated. And sometimes I do wonder, you know, because, so I, this year I always try and choose a golfer that I like to follow that might be up and coming, people don't know about as much. And I usually kind of get into that world around like February when the tournaments start,
yeah.
Go to Waste Management and try and like pick a guy and follow him. And this year it was Jake Knapp, because he bombs it. I think he's swaggy. I think he kind of is like got the cool like penguin deal with, like Cam Smith.
Yeah.
And, I just loved his game. And when I started to follow him, I noticed that he had PXG irons. And then like everything else was a mixed bag.
Yep.
And then he won like 2 weeks later, mm-hmm. and you guys did the what's in the bag. And he was playing like a 425 LST, right? Like three pings ago.
Yeah.
And he was playing PXG irons. I can't even remember what he had as a putter, but the whole point that I'm coming back to is golf would be a really interesting world if players, you know, didn't have full bag deals or eight club bag deals for the money. And we just watched what they played if they got fully fit.
Yeah.
And I'd be curious to see what would happen and how people's games would change.
Well, number one, they are fully fit.
I should say fully fit with different manufacturers across their entire bag.
But we've seen as well, here's the advent. I always like to use this as an example when you talk about TaylorMade and you talk about Tiger Woods. So when Tiger Woods had his iron at Titleist, which, you know, hi, Larry Bobka from Second Swing.
Saw him today.
Yep.
Great man.
When he helped design some of those and then get him into a position, that iron has not necessarily changed in any of its dimensions since the very first set. Now, that's because of what Tiger wants. But there's a Rory blade. There's a DJ blade. There's probably a Scottie Scheffler blade. There's a Tommy Fleetwood blade. Why do these guys all have their own? Well, because they have certain unique things that they want to look after in terms of its look, its offset, its blade heights, all of those things.
Yeah.
We are never going to get any of them, although we could get the Tiger because it's literally a copy of it. But, you know, how many irons styles has TaylorMade got? One, two, three, four. It's like six, maybe seven.
So every year you're saying they come out with six or seven styles?
Yeah, basically. They every company goes through a run of a tour blade, a cavity back,
sure.
A little bit more of a cavity back, yeah. A little bit more of a cavity back, a player's distance iron. Every company has multiple options, probably somewhere in the neighborhood of about 5 to 7, depending at what time you are. Very few people ever come in and ask to hit a blade.
Sure.
It doesn't mean we don't have them. We have them. But most people don't come in to play that.
Unless it's the blueprint tee, because those things are sexy.
They are. And, you know, there's a lot to be said about that, because for a long time, Ping hadn't really entered the blade game at all. And they started to get into it with the blueprint, the original blueprint. It was really small. But there were a handful of guys that were playing that out there. And so this blueprint tee was an easy transition. So now they've got a bunch more guys playing something like that. But even to that fact, you start talking about most golf bags are progressive sets of some sort, where it might start with a blade, get into a cavity back, and end with some sort of distance club at the top of the bag.
Yeah.
But that's all about fitting. So that's all about launch angle and landing angle. Do I get it up? Does it come down steep? And how quickly does it stop? And that's for every player. One of my last fittings of the day was not as high as we want to get. On a driver.
Like in launch, you're saying?
Yeah, like in launch.
But and when you're saying not as high, just for the audience, are you talking like 90 feet, 80 feet, or like 50 feet?
Well, let's look at it from launch angle perspective. That peak height can change depending on spin.
Sure.
He had a good spin number, but the launch was pretty much 9 or 10. We needed probably like 12 or 13 if we could get it. So to kind of break that down, every 1 degree that we look at in terms of loft on a club is only about half a degree in terms of actual launch angle.
Interesting.
Now, again, it's a generalization. It's not, you know, like some people come in and go, well, I need a shaft that launches it higher. Well, the shaft won't do that. I can add loft to the club, but a shaft can't add loft because my swing does what my swing does. A shaft is definitely a part of the club, in the decision.
Well, I could see why somebody would say that though. So like if you were to just go look at the Tour AD or the Ventus lines, right? You're going to see low launch, mid launch, high launch.
Yeah.
So, and just to bleed into this a little bit, the purpose of why we wanted to sit down and talk is one, cause I love talking golf with you.
Yeah.
But two is to talk about like equipment and, you know, stuff for 2024. And, you know, we talked to Aaron a little more in depth about like the whole fitting process and all those things. And I really wanted to break down like equipment and shafts and all the new stuff that's coming out and helping people understand. Like, I think there is this false notion about what certain clubs can do and shafts can do and all these things. And the more you simplify it, the more you start to realize half of what you heard out there is just bullshit.
Oh, it's marketing.
Yeah. It's marketing and bullshit. Marketing. And if you can really start to get out of that mindset and try to figure out what's best for your game, you're probably going to walk in and get fit into something and just have an open mind and realize you're better fit for, you know, the ping with a stock shaft and like a QI10 with some aftermarket shaft that you might think is really cool and expensive, but isn't right for your game.
Yeah.
So to talk about that, like I could see why somebody would come in and say that. And so maybe just talk a little bit about how and why, you know, they either market the shafts that way, what they actually do, and then how, when you fit somebody, call it specifically for a driver, like what you're looking for and the why, and we'll kind of dive into some of the equipment stuff.
Awesome.
Sweet, huh?
Let's do it.
Hell yeah, brother.
Okay.
Welcome to the Member Guest Podcast.
Let's do it.
Now we start. You know, talk to people about, you know, great example, the guy that walks in and says, hey, I want a shaft that makes me hit the ball higher.
Yeah.
And you go, all right, man, we gotta take a step back here.
So I'll start with some of the connections that I've been, I say blessed with, right? I mean, I have a lot of people that are much more knowledgeable than me as well. You know, working at Second Swing, but also even going back before that, I got into the club side of things when I was still a high school teacher and had my summers to do anything and everything I wanted in terms of golf. And I'd really start to study a lot of those things when we're talking about EI charts. So an EI chart is just basically how a shaft bends and where it bends. And so you can start to equate the stiffness as well as the flexing. I started to dig into that a lot more. Also, I've had a lot of experience with this, even just before the fitting booth, because of my work with independent golf reviews. So I've been...
Oh, yeah. What's the actual name of that page so people can go look?
Yeah, it's...
Because I had no idea that you were even a part of it until we were playing with Zinger.
Yeah.
And you guys were talking about it. I was like, wait, that's you?
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of cool.
Well, so the title is Independent Golf Reviews. If you look up on Google, iGolf Reviews.
Yeah, that's how I know. It was iGolf Reviews.
And so it was started by Ryan Hyman. Trying to think of a time frame. My best...
Don't age yourself.
I know. It's okay. I know. I'm old. But so we talk about Zinger. Zinger has been one of my best friends since first grade. We grew up together. He's a golfer, and he had actually started by getting involved with Ryan and had met him and just done some golfing and played. And this is really early on, as you talk about some of the blog days, and you talk about these eerie websites out there.
Yeah, the dark web.
Yeah,
dark
web. So it was basically, hey, listen, a company says, hey, would you review this product? So would you write about it, talk about it, picture about it? And Ryan had the idea of, let's make this into a website. Let's do something with this. But we've all got day jobs. So we've got, you know, that's something where we did this for the passion. There's no money in it. We're not gaining money out of this.
Welcome to the Member Guest Podcast.
I know. Yeah. Well, I was supposed
to be. It's fun, man.
By the way, I was supposed to be the first guest. Do you remember that?
You were supposed to be the first guest. Yeah, I do remember that. That was a long time ago.
And there are so many.
Took over a year.
But there are so many other great people that have been in here way before me, and I'm glad for that. So.
And I'm glad we finally got it done.
So one of the things that I kind of took from that was Ryan had said to me, is like, he's got these clubs, but hey, would you do a shaft? You know, yes, I'm totally in, because I totally get into the technology. I love it. I want to know what it does, what it feels like, what it's supposed to do. So I started with that a long time ago. Now Ryan's got a ton of the articles on there. Zinger basically did the apparel. Right? He's the guy that looks good, and he is the best looking man in golf. So he'll tell you it's undisputed. All right.
He's probably 1A and then Van Rooyen's 1B.
Yeah, he's
and up, then there's hundreds after that.
Right. So it's his moniker and he's got it.
Yeah.
But anyway, JP enters the situation a little bit after that as well, because JP hadn't gone to Titleist yet as his run with
JP Golf Co., JP Wedges, JP, yes, right?
Yeah. And James Patrick Harrington, JP, he ended up coming kind of into this fold, but partly because Ryan as well. And Ryan wanted to do an article and said, hey, there's this wedge guy that's doing stuff over in St. Louis Park. He's got what he calls the grind house. And, you know, and
is that what you were calling it? The grind house?
No, that's what JP calls it.
Oh, that's what JP calls it. Yeah. I thought you were talking about you for a sec.
No. And so it was one of the things where, like, his uniqueness and his first early styles of his wedges were about grinding. It was about the sole. It was about the camber. And it was about, you know, what he could do with that. And he had some players out there too. Like, I know Aaron Badley has played them a little bit.
Yeah, he talked about that. He said that he put him in the bag and he won.
He did. And so
that is sweet. Can you, for a second, can you imagine a professional golfer putting something that you made in their bag and then they win with it?
Yeah.
That's got to feel freaking sweet.
Well, that's what Larry does.
Yeah.
I mean, that's literally, Larry's, let's put this in there. And then they win with it.
I will watch people go into second swing and go into a fitting with Larry. And I kind of look at them like, the man is so humble. And
he is.
And that person getting fit with him would never know that he used to fit Tiger for his putters.
No, and hand him?
Tiger Woods.
Right.
Like,
you name it. The list goes on and on.
It's wild.
Right? So, you know, I like to tell people, it's the same thing Larry will do once in a while. You want to know who I am? Go Google my name. That's always a good way to do it.
Nice subtle flex by Larry there. And then he'll sip on his Diet Coke that he got from Dairy Queen or Larry's drink for the day.
So what I look at it was the idea too. I wanted to know more as much as I could. So even then, before I'd started working at Second Swing, I've already been deep in this. I was building clubs, repairing clubs, and fitting clubs, and using the knowledge I started to grow. It's an experience thing, really. It's not, oh my gosh, I know everything there is to know.
It's a hobby.
Yeah, and it was it's a hobby and a passion, as we talk about that.
Yeah.
So I started help by writing some articles and looking at that. We call it an unbiased, on Independent Golf Reviews, IGR, we call it an unbiased opinion.
Like, does My Golf Spy do this too?
Yeah.
Isn't that kind of what they do? Although correct. I feel like they might be a little biased sometimes, but well, maybe not.
It's hard to talk about others because I don't know the ins and outs of what they do.
Yeah, 100%.
But I can certainly tell you that the stuff you read from like My Golf Spy or Golf Works or what's another one? There's a couple of them out there. They're doing what we're doing. Another good one was actually Golf Magazine.
Like, oh, really?
Yeah, Golf Magazine.
Yeah, because they put out their lists every year of like, you know, the top putter, the top driver, and so whatever it might be.
Yeah, they have a facility and they test in the facility. Hmm. And they're testing the driver heads and iron heads. They're literally doing testing. So is like My Golf Spy.
I know they are. But, well, I know My Golf Spy is because I got suckered into one of their posts from today where they were like, you know, we unveiled what we believe is the best driver of the year. And, you know, I'm like 45 seconds. I'm like, tell me what the fucking best driver of the year is, right?
Yeah, right.
And they were like, you're going to have to tune in tomorrow to see the next video. I'm like, oh, you got me.
Yep.
So I am going to tune in tomorrow to see what it is. But well, it's stuff like that.
They set the hook. They just got to reel it in.
Yeah. Well, they got me. So I'm going to check tomorrow. And By the way, it's going to be the ping, I think.
Well, we can get into that in a second.
Yeah, sure.
But anyway, so it's from the shafts perspective. The other part of it is like with golf balls.
Sure.
I really dig in on that. I've been fortunate enough so that this kind of goes to the other side of it. I've talked with and I have a nice relationship, whether it's via email or texting and such, with some of the engineers, whether it's at Ping, it's at Titleist, it's at Cobra.
Because you guys probably talk to them all the time and give them feedback on, you know, because you guys have thousands of people that walk through your door every day and hit the golf clubs.
Well, and also there's questions on my part, like, okay, what's this do? How's this do that? What, you know, what am I looking for? So one of the lead engineers at Fujikura that has designed and won like serious majors from a shaft company perspective, he told me once, like, it's not necessarily what we want to talk about, but if something is statistically higher launching by any measure, it's higher launching. So if someone says, well, this if someone says this is a medium launch and this is a high launch or a low launch, statistically speaking, as long as it is technically lower by the numbers.
Yeah. I follow.
That doesn't mean that it's 20 feet lower.
Yeah,
that
doesn't, it means it could be a foot lower, and it's not going to matter right. from player to player, swing to swing. It's right. just whatever they're testing it on their robots or whatever, and the blue is going, you know, what, I don't know, 30 yards in the air, 90 feet in the air, and the other one's going 100, the other one's going 87.
Right.
It's just boom, boom, boom.
And so that's something.
God, there's so much marketing in golf. I hate it.
Well, I think if you look at it from this perspective, right, why do we go to a certain company and look at their webpage? It's usually the player on the PGA Tour. That's usually what it is.
You think?
Well, we see either an advertisement or you see that, what does Tony Finau play?
Fair. He's Ping.
Okay. What's John Rahm playing?
Callaway.
Yeah.
But right. I'm a very avid golf watcher.
Okay. If you're watching the commercials, what kind of ball does everyone play?
Yeah. Pro V1.
It's the number one ball in golf. Now, that's not what everyone plays, but you get the idea.
Yeah.
So when you look at the marketing side of it, how do we educate ourselves? What do?
You could do what I did and just go into Second Swing every week for 4 days straight and spend every extra dollar that you have to figure it out. Or you could probably just go talk to somebody and do the research and talk to someone like yourself, like a fitter, and you know, try and figure it out that way.
So if you look at the marketing side of it, right, marketing really drives what's happening. You know, how many people walk in and they want to hit the new TaylorMade? The TaylorMade's not the best driver on the market.
Yeah.
But the TaylorMade is one of the best drivers on the market. So when I talk about like drivers as an example, we talk about shafts and I'll get into that a little bit later. Number one, so I talk about this guy that I fit, he needs more launch. That's in loft because the club head hits the ball, not the shaft.
Sure. Yep.
And so the shaft is important. But a lot of people like to talk about it as, well, isn't the shaft the thing? No, like the body is the engine of the swing. You know, it's how you use your body, how you turn it, how fast you can get pieces going and what kind of balance you have. The body's the engine.
You're saying that the physical body.
The physical body.
The physical body. Okay.
Right. That's what makes the club move. A shaft doesn't move on its own. Head doesn't move on its own. So we take the head as an example. Let's talk about drivers. So what's on the market? We've got a lot of really, 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 really good drivers.
Yeah, I mean, people always say the four, like if you're not talking about the big four, you're probably not like, and you could maybe I'll throw Cobra in there too. And everybody's telling me the BXG driver's good. So I'm just going to go six. I'm going to go Callaway. I'm going to go Titleist, Ping, TaylorMade, Cobra. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you could say BXG, Mizuno. So maybe seven.
Yeah. And I would say,
but the big four, are the big four, right? It's the,
they are.
It's the Callaway, the Titleist, the think, Ping and the TaylorMade.
I also think that that's actually the big five because
who's the fifth?
Well, I think
Kirkland.
No, I've hit that by the way.
Is it sick?
Yeah. Well, if you want to know all about it, go to Independent Golf Reviews.
Okay.
Yeah. There's a review on it.
Okay.
I would look at it as saying like Ping, Titleist, TaylorMade, Callaway and Cobra.
Cobra. Okay. So Cobra is snuck into the top five.
It is. And here's why. There's a legal limit in terms of the ball speed that can happen coming off of a club based on swing speed, right?
That similar to a softball bat.
Yeah.
Or I don't know if they do that in hockey, but I would imagine potentially. You can't put a cork in a baseball bat, right?
Like no.
There's limits to.
The other thing is like if you were to I'm a fan of NASCAR. I'm not into it, but like I'll watch that kind of a thing. There are certain races where they don't want the car to go that fast. They're called restrictor plate races.
Mm.
Well, basically companies in golf, when it comes to like the driver specifically, they have restrictor plates. They can't make the ball go any faster than 1.5 times the speed of the club.
Got it. So let's roll the ball back.
No, totally different discussion. Sorry. We'll get into that later.
I didn't want to do that, but I did. I'm sorry.
I look at it and I'm like, if nobody can make the ball go faster, they're all on the same race. They're all on the same track.
Yeah. It's how to make it go straighter, how to make it be more consistent and how to make it look cool.
Right. If you think about the design, especially for race cars like that, you can't have things that are sticking off in different directions to give you a competitive advantage. But in golf, the one thing that's not regulated is aerodynamics. And that's why you see bumps on it and you see twists and turns and all sorts of shapes. They've got gloss. They got matte. That's the unregulated part. You can only have a certain amount of mass or weight, a certain amount back before it's illegal. So when you move weight back, that creates more stability in rotation.
So could you, is there a limit to how much lead tape you could put in the back of your driver?
Technically, yes.
Technically, like what is the, is there a limit to how heavy you can make the driver head?
It would have to be tested. Because part of it goes
because nobody's going to just go pull your bag out and go put it on a tent. No one has that.
We don't have that. We don't have the technology to do something like that. There can be competitive advantages in having something that's weighted appropriately. If you make something lighter, that doesn't mean you swing it faster. It means that you need to swing it faster to gain the same result.
Sure.
So when we talk about swing speeds as they slow down, one of the first things I can do with a slower swing speed is just add loft. Because the ball's in the air, you think about friction. There's a lot less friction on the ball in the air than there is where the ball's on the ground. And we hear all the time, oh, you know, I get a lot of roll. Yeah, that's nice, except when it's wet. And then you don't.
And if the course isn't firm, or there's a lot of different things. It's all about the carry.
But so you can only move the weight to a certain position. You can only have so much weight. Based on calculations for these companies. So what they're talking about when they talk about max forgiveness is moving a weight into a position that it allows for the least rotation, both vertically as well as horizontally. And that's where the 10,000 comes from. You see QI10 is named for, Quest for Inertia 10,000.
Oh, okay.
Quest for Inertia, yeah. The QI. The Ping, they have the 10K, which is, again, a 10,000 mark in terms of its inertia. That's the resistance to motion. So it's done in two ways. It's done up and down, and it's done, horizontally. And so each of those are about 5,000, because there's only so much you can do one way before you have to do it to the other way, or you're going to get a club that just hits it sideways.
Well, so we've been talking about this for a little bit then, that just in general, like golf technology, if you will, mm-hmm. hasn't, in Andy's opinion, I am definitely not knowledgeable enough to have a true opinion, but I imagine that he's right and maybe he'll agree, is that like golf technology hasn't changed.
No, it has.
So we want to go over the past 5 years, right? And let's say that you take the Ping G420 or 425, like 3, 4, 5 models ago, and compared to the G430.
Yep.
A lot of people would argue like Victor Hovland's still playing the 420 and the 425. I think he plays the 425. Jake Knapp plays the 425. So like, how as a player, one, how do you justify every year coming in and checking out the new driver? Mm-hmm. Like, cause it's not just going to continue to get better and better and better, right? Like as somebody who, myself, does that, I'm always looking to get the latest and greatest, but I know there's a point of diminishing return. Eventually you just got to find a club that works for you and you got to go with it. So how do you tell people when they come into second swing, like, hey, yeah, we're going to hit all the new drivers for this year, but hey, you should also maybe take a look at this driver and this driver. It might be a 3-year-old model, but it's still brand new in the wrapper, but like, this could be what you want to play.
Yeah. It's actually a good point. One of my first fittings of the day was a driver that we ended up going in a used driver. Now for that, here's a good example. He had a Callaway Rogue STLS, which was two models ago.
Is that the one that's green and black?
No, it's the brown and gold.
The brown and gold.
Black and gold.
Yeah, yep.
And last year was the Paradigm, and we're currently in the AI Smoke Paradigm. Mm-hmm. So I had grabbed, just thinking, hey, let's see what Paradigm does. I mean, it's not that we need to spend a lot of money, but we had a Paradigm that was the same loft, but it's got a weight track. So now I can move the weight. It also had a lighter Ventus 5 stiff. For a guy that's swinging about 100 miles an hour, it's a nice fit. But the stability immediately, just right down the middle, and everything's farther. Well, because it's straighter, it's farther. But also,
yeah, and it's fine in the center of the face, I would imagine. So he's launching it better. And
so I increased the loft. I put it up to 11.5. So it went, averaged about 15 yards more carry, maybe about 5 yards more total, but 15 yards carry. That's huge.
Yeah, it's a really big deal if you're playing, if you're trying to go from the whites to the blues or whatever, and you're trying to carry bunkers and lines and all that stuff. Absolutely.
And that's one of the things that we also have to look at is what's better. when you come in, there's four things that happen to a golf ball. So there's the speed of the golf ball when you hit it, the launch of the golf ball, the spin of the golf ball, and the direction it's going. Those are the only four things that matter because that's what happens to the golf ball.
Sure.
I need to somehow influence the way that you swing a club with the club to make that ball do what we'd like it to do. So loft is usually the first thing. And we talk about a driver. And every company's got every loft. Some companies have more adjustability in terms of just loft or talking about opening or closing.
Yeah, you can start with a 9 and some you can get all the way up to 11 and down to 8 and others, you know, it's only a half degree each way or whatever.
So we talk about the technology. Is it better? Well, first and foremost, no company can go beyond the legal limits.
That's so I think if we just pause right there, I think that's what Andy and, you know, some people in the golf world would say is that the limits have been there for 5 years. That's why
however long it is. Yeah.
That's why the PGA is rolling the ball back, right? Like the limits are the limits and they need to find a way to, it's a longer conversation,
yeah,
but the ultimate point is if the limits are the limits, how do you keep making a better driver year over year?
Are
we all being duped or is
marketing,
there actual
marketing? This is better than last time.
So that's the conversation and that's trying to help, you know, listeners understand going in what to look for.
Number one, we have to define technology. And number one, technology is the material and the application.
Yeah. I would say the actual, like when you're looking at a driver head or even a shaft, right? Like what had changed from year one to year two, like, or from X to Y. Like I remember when TaylorMade went to the carbon face, that was like a really big change.
It was.
I would say the twist face was also a really big change. Like two things you could noticeably look at the driver and be like,
yeah,
wow, those are big changes.
Those are the two things, right? Technology is material and application. The application in that position for TaylorMade was the twist face. They made the face different. They applied it different. Then they went to carbon face. Again, they put a different material in, but they applied it the same way. So there's application and material. And when you look at it from that perspective, drivers are, you know this, I'm never in a fitting, I'm never trying to make perfect better. I can't do that.
Yeah. You'll tell somebody if they're hitting a good, don't change it.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. You know, if the numbers are coming across, let's say I'm hitting at 252 as a total distance. It's got the perfect launch, spin, ball speed, and it's right down the middle. Well, I want 260. Well, then that's a different story. That's not the club anymore. That's how you're swinging it.
Yeah.
And then we have to, like, we have that question with shafts all the time as well. If this is going to swing faster. No, it's going to swing faster if you move it faster. But the club's an inert object. It's not moving any faster.
It's really funny you say that too, because like when I have lessons with whoever, I mainly see the two Lukes in my world, Luke Elfner at Winsong, who I primarily see, and then Luke Benoit from Interlaken that I'll see every month or two.
Great teachers.
And yeah, they're both phenomenal. It's in the way that they both approach from a different perspective has helped me so much. I'm pumped for this season, all that fun stuff. But Luke Elfner told me one day, he was like, I want you to feel like you're taking a half swing. Mm-hmm. I said, okay. So I felt like I took a half swing and he showed me the video.
Yeah.
And it was the exact same swing
that we
flushed it and it went further and I got way better numbers. And he was like, it's not about like feeling like you have to hit it harder or a longer swing or whatever it is. Like you need to look at this from a perspective of like the golf swing and the way that you can generate power using different moves.
Right.
And it really was an eye opener in my journey of my swing.
Yeah, that's where it becomes a little bit tricky because you'll also, you know, some people will come in and they'll be like, well, I've got different swings. Well, pick one. Let's just pick one.
And driver.
Yeah. Well, but one of the things about that too is I understand that what's happening and I'm okay with that. Like if you have different swings because every swing is different, right? Not every single hole is the same. Not every shot requires the same exactly what you, and that's okay. But also realize that when you talk about the swing in and of itself, we generally do what we always do because of the way that our body has a certain limitations. So when they come in for that, I'm like, hey, we're good. The interesting part about a fitting is that you walk out of there, that driver isn't changing. We talk about you come in, you get a driver, we've got really good numbers. Now you got to get outside and play. Your swing changes, your mood that day, your feel that day, the course, the only thing not changing is the club
and the ball. Yeah, well, the same things, right?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Those two things are not changing. And yet we say, oh, well, this is awesome because I did get a guy, you know, my last fitting, I was talking about getting a little more launch and it was way better. And we're like, this is awesome. And it was super funny because even when we talked about that in terms of like, what can I do differently? We've already got perfect numbers. We're not going to be able to do something differently unless we're going to change you. And I don't want to change you because what you've got with what you do is already balanced and it's already the best you can get. And so when you look at it from that perspective, the club's not changing. I said, and he played yesterday. This is awesome. I said,
where do you play? Pioneer?
Oh, I have no idea. I didn't ask him where
he played. The course is open.
So he said, I hit this drive and it was like 20 or 30 yards longer than where my buddies were. And that's like really unique. And I said, okay, awesome example. I do this with people all the time. First, I said, when you hit that ball and it was so perfect, did you turn to your buddies and say, oh man, I got to bottle that up. And he's like, yeah, that's almost exactly what I said. I wish I could just do that every time. So then when you hit a bad one, do you say, oh, I know what I did? And he's like, well, yeah, you know, I must've done this, that, or whatever. Well, the reality is that we don't know what we did on the good one or the bad one. We did, like, technically we don't know. We're not, our eyes aren't out behind us. They're not seeing that swing.
We might think we can feel something. Yeah. We might know.
Like, well, have you ever had like, you know, felt like you got a bug on you and you're like, oh my gosh. And then you look and there's no bug there.
Yeah. It's like the mental of
so like,
whatever.
Oh my gosh. There's no bug there, but you felt like there was one. See, feelings aren't the same as thoughts. And we get tricked and we get a little bit duped in that because we think we felt something. And the reality is that you may have, there's probably a pretty good chance that you did the same thing that you've always done. And that swing produced maybe a different timing, or maybe you rolled this or you didn't roll that, or maybe you came up instead of down. And you can't quantify that because the human body is just changing every single swing anyway.
Yeah. Swing in general, when I was trying to learn, you know, how to swing better, the whole mindset that I felt like I had to have was like the good days when I hit it really good, I would feel like my timing was right that day. Right?
Yes.
Like my timing was on, everything was moving together. And when I started to break everything down, the conversation became, how can we make that time that you have when you're hitting the ball a little bit longer? Cause that's what it makes it more consistent, right? When you're in the slot longer mm-hmm. and the club is square for longer, mm-hmm. how can you move to just, you know, have that timing a little bit more time every time that you play, you're going to get a lot more consistent.
Yeah.
And so I think when people are going through that and, you know, they have those good days in the fitting bay or they have those good days out on the golf course, that's like the battle of what people are trying to like, oh, I hit this the best that day. And then, oh, I went out and played and
sure.
I went through that for a really, really long time. Right.
Yeah.
It's really hard to get out of that mindset.
Sure. And then you have the day where things aren't clicking and you're just like, well, that's a bad club. No, it's not a bad club. It's just, you're swinging different today.
Yeah.
And part of that too is, let's talk about putters as an example, a really good example of that's putters, right? There's an interesting one because is technology really changing? Yes, they do have materials. Yes, they do apply them, but for the basic sense, certain putters do like, but based on the physics, they're going to do the same thing as other putters, whether they're 10 years old or 5 years old or last year's model.
Sure.
Right. So we talk about that consistency. And one of the things that you don't see a lot of is most of the guys at the elite level don't change out putters. They may have another putter.
Man, I feel like lately it's been a lot.
Well, no, hold on. You're looking at a person.
Okay. Okay.
You're talking about Scottie Scheffler.
He's no, gone I'm talking putter about, to putter to putter I mean, to putter. From last year to this year, watching tournaments, you know how many more lab golf putters I've seen on tour? Compared to where I started playing a lab golf putter 3 years ago. I hate the look of them. But this year, I think I've seen more people change whatever they're playing going to lab. Like I've seen Will Zalatoris game it. Adam Scott has gamed it. And then you started to see like Ricky and Wyndham change to the Jailbirds. Now a bunch of people got the Jailbirds out there. I feel like putting has become this almost game of like whatever is hot and rolling well. Mm-hmm. It's almost like a copycat game a little bit.
Well, and part of that too, let's go back to the conversation I had earlier. You see someone hit it and you immediately think, okay, I'm going to go look at that. What is that? That's marketing. So there's two more out of the 600 guys that play on the PGA Tour.
Okay, well, let's talk about then going from like blades to mallets. How many more mallets are being played on tour? Mallet style putters are being played on tour now compared to blades. 5 years ago.
Yeah, a lot.
And that, right? that's a technology face type of swing.
That's an application
change.
So for instance, we say this about wedges and pretty much about putters too. And if you're talking about a forging, so we talk about forging versus forged, there's a difference, right? Forged is a, could be a stamped piece, but our forging is a whole solid piece.
Yeah. Okay. So we need to release this one before the JP episode.
Yeah.
He talked about the forging process with me for a solid 5 minutes about how like,
and that's not enough.
Forged is like you get the air bubbles within the club and all that stuff. And he's like, forging is, you know, this thousands of pounds of pressure, and he broke it down, and I'm just sitting there like a kid in a candy store.
Right.
Like,
okay.
Oh my God. So everything needs to be forged.
So let's talk about wedges, because this is a really important piece to this. So if, and JP withstanding, because that's a different wedge at a higher level. But if we're talking about a Vokey, a Cleveland, a Ping, what am I missing? A TaylorMade or a Callaway, they're using the same steel.
Yeah. Right.
It's the same carbon steel.
It's the way that it gets grinded or ground in there.
Well, there's certain applications, right? They're going to maybe do something, whether it's a heat treatment, whether it's a spin mill, whether it's a disc groove, and I'm going to add dots in between the grooves, whatever you want to do. At the end of the day, it's essentially the exact same material from a different company. So if I've got the same shaft, they're going to look different. They're going to feel different. I'm going to like the look of the rounded one. You're not going to like the look of the rounded one. I'm going to like the look. So you start going through the same thing in putters. What's a Scotty Cameron made out of? The same thing a Bettinardi's made out of. The same thing a Toulon's made out of. The same thing, the same thing. As you start really looking at it in a more in-depth process, is like these clubs are, there's not necessarily as much material that they're doing something different with. It's the application.
Yeah. And you really, so you started to hit, because where I was going to go with our conversation in general is like, starting with drivers, like I think most people could look at, let's just start with the four major ones.
Yes.
The carbon face of TaylorMade.
Yep.
The, you know, whatever Titleist uses, I forget what that black face is called.
It's
that,
like, it's a specific kind of like military titanium that they're using.
Yeah. That, like, right.
Is it ATI or something like that?
Sure.
Yeah.
And then you look at like Callaway and Ping, and all four of those faces to the eye would look very different. And then you get into woods. It's very similar to drivers. Same thing with the faces and all that stuff. Then you get into irons. Mm-hmm. And I feel like if you took the logos off the irons and put them in front of even myself, I don't know if I could tell you the different manufacturers, right? Because there's not a lot of variability in what you can do to an iron.
Yeah.
And so to bring the conversation back to like, you know, talking about equipment and what people need to actually think about, like, is the crux of this whole conversation have to do with look and feel and the
performance
and just what works for you not necessarily, you know, the quote unquote marketing side of it, of like forgiveness and all this bullshit out there.
But what you have to realize is like, how are we going to reach the masses? So generally speaking, there are a few things in the industry that you can look at and say, I can do this, right? So what's the industry standard for the length of an iron?
Are we talking like a 7-iron?
Well, okay. So we talk about a 7-iron. It's all over the map. It's 1/4 inches here and it's 1/2 inches here. But the point is that the company is going to do something different if they think that that's necessary, right? The same thing is true. So when you get in and you're starting to compare and you say, oh, I'm going to hit these 4 irons or these 5 irons, I'm going to get you in a shaft that's the same, just so that we're comparing at least an apple to an apple. But every one of those heads is going to feel different. It's going to react different. It's going to look different. And the reality is that the length could be different. The lie angles, you know, good example, there's a Titleist is 63 degrees of a lie angle across all of their irons. Ping is about 62. TaylorMade 61.5. Mizuno 61.5 on all 7 irons. TaylorMade is 62.5.
Well, I was going to say, I don't remember what the year it was, but there was one year that it seemed like every single person started to realize that the 7-iron PXG made was effectively a 5-iron with the loft.
That's been happening a long time.
That's been happening a long time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Ping did that like in the 80s and 90s.
And they were like, our stuff goes farther than everybody's. Yeah, all they did was add a little off to it.
Okay, so this is where companies go, all right? What's the general rule of thumb is that if I have a right-handed player, the ball will kind of move in what direction?
For who? But I would generally say, I'd say right.
Yeah, correct.
Slice. It's going to go right.
Generally.
Generally.
And yes. And there are reasons why that happens based on the movement of the club. There's also the way that they make the club. You can put weight in certain places. You can reduce some of the twisting in the back and the forth with that. But
yeah, they all have like the weight and the toe now, that little.
But that doesn't mean that you're going to step in there and hit the ball to the right with your irons if your swing is different. And so what we have to look at is that the manufacturers are kind of doing this, you know, general club. They're doing a stock option. Their stock option fits the general public. They're the highest percentage of people. They're looking at something that's 50, 60, 80% of the people would fit into this.
Sure.
That's because, why it's,
yeah, the, if they have 100,000 people walk in the door to get fit, and right, 80,000, we're going to hit a slice. So let's make a club that's anti-slice and people are going to hit it and think that it's the best thing in the world.
And a good point.
That was me for 5 years.
And a good point to that too. Kind of me. It's also like, if you look at it from a purchasing perspective, how can the company forecast if they have to forecast more variables? It's very tough. Yeah. So it's kind of why
it's business at the end of the day.
This is where education experience come in on my part as a fitting. I need to know what every one of those shafts does.
Sure.
I need to know what it does under the hood. I can't just look at the hood and go, well, this is a Ford, a Chevy, or a Dodge, or whatever. I can't do that. I need to know what engine's in it and how that engine working.
So, and I know there's so much variability, and I want to get your take on, you know, the best equipment for this year. Mm-hmm. But I do have one more question, which is, when somebody walks in and you just have, do you always have them hit their own stuff first, or do you give them like the most stock, basic, standard length, 7-iron, standard loft lie, 7-iron, so you can see what the tendencies are and then start from there?
I would say that
that's what I wish I would have done when I first started all of my stuff.
The fitting starts as soon as I meet a person. And I mean by that, like, you know, are you happy today? Oh, you know, I was like, hey, how you feeling? All good? No, I got a bad back. Well, guess what? The fitting is going to change based on some of those things too. Sure. And I'm not going to try to do something about that, but it's also really good information. It's like, hey, you know what? I had my knee replaced last year and I'm just looking to, oh, well, that's different because you may not be able to move the club like you used to. And so you come in with this club from 15 years ago.
Yeah.
And so what I would say is that I like to say this to characterize it in my fittings. The right fit is usually based on length and strength. So from a length perspective, if we're talking about irons, wedges, putters, even fairway woods and woods to that measure, how long that club is important. You know, people come in, oh, I need a shorter driver to control it. No, you probably hit it lower.
You need to find the center of the face.
Well, yeah, that's true. But, you know, we talk about tour players, right? As soon as we hear, well, so-and-so's got this on tour. Well, you don't have a tour swing. Like, you don't have his swing. So what we need to do is find out what works great for you. And length has to do with it. Lie angles have to do with it. Loft has to do with it.
Well, and for anyone that hasn't seen it, you were the one that opened me up to the Ping chart, you know, that with all the colors and stuff. And I remember sitting in the bay in Minneapolis and you were like, look at this. And I can't remember what I was playing, but you know, I did my hand to floor.
Yeah. Wrist to floor,
right, wrist to floor, height. Yeah. My height, all that stuff. And it was like, you should be playing, one flat or whatever it was. Like,
yeah.
Again, it's all generalization.
It's a great baseline.
Great baseline.
Yeah. Because here's what happens to that. Let's say for instance, I needed to add a half inch on your shaft length, but you've played a half inch less for 25 years.
Sure.
So all of a sudden I'm going to add something a little bit more that you're not comfortable with. And now that changes the whole dynamic. And so it's not that we can't do that, but we also have to look at that. As soon as you start changing the length, you also change the lie dynamic. So irons, as an example, let's say 7-iron is at 62 degrees of lie angle at standard length.
Yeah. You add a half inch. Wouldn't that make it go up a half degree?
You would want. Yeah. So if I add a half inch, its effective length is now a 6-iron because it's a half inch longer.
Yep.
And the effective lie angle on that is 61.
Yeah, it goes up. The lie angle goes up, correct?
Right. No, yeah. It goes flat.
Oh, it goes flatter.
It goes flatter as we go up. But if I'm going to add a half inch, that's not standard lie anymore. If you fit well into standard lie, but I need more length, and that's where the chart ends up becoming, and this is for every company, it just becomes a starting point.
Yeah.
I have to start looking at it and saying, all right, how do you swing? Right. I can physically do this. I physically can't do that. I can move this. This is, and then the other part of it is the strength part. And I always like to use because some of these really young kids, I had a kid in, a really good swinger of the golf ball. He had, he stands about 6'3", but he had a TaylorMade club because they're just a little bit shorter, is under 37 inches on his 7-iron. Because the P series is actually a quarter inch shorter than everyone else. Again, there's no such thing as standard. It's just every company does something a little different for their irons. And I said, well, I'm going to add some length. So right away I added a half inch. So it's a little over 37. It's not gigantic, but that's still a half inch. And all of a sudden it's chunk, 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 chunk. And I'm like, well, let's just hit a few more. Okay. Pretend this is your 6-iron. Just do that for me. Pretend this is the 6-iron. All right. And he swings it and all of a sudden he's flushing it. Because at some point, I got a 7-iron. I know I have a 7-iron. I've always swung the 7-iron this way.
Yeah.
And so now when we start messing around with the lengths, sometimes that our body has to realize this isn't a 7-iron. It says that on there.
Sure. Yeah.
But this is just like your 6-iron. And all of a sudden he's flushing it. It's higher, it's straighter, it's farther.
That same thing happened to me with Cam one day. And it was, we were going through lie adjustments and exact same thing happened. It's wild. You know what it does too, Tyler, is it really makes you have a different type of appreciation for fitters.
Yeah.
And I've seen, you know, not all of you at Second Swing, but you know me, I'm in all the time.
Yeah.
There's so much more that goes into it than just, you know, let's find what you flush and hit the best.
Yeah.
When you start to really break down all the dynamics.
Well, and so as an example, the training, the education, right? I'm not just bringing what I know. I'm bringing what everyone that I communicate with knows.
Yeah.
I'm trying to find what's going to work best for you with minimal change, because we're creatures of habit and if I'm comfortable making this certain swing, I'd much rather have you do that and try to get the club to do something different to the ball.
Yeah.
That's advantageous. Another good one is people come in all the time. It's like with irons as an example, I don't spin it enough. I don't get much spin. I can hit it high, but I don't get spin. There's only so much I can do in which I'm going to
be. Yeah, you got to hit the ball harder at impact, right?
Well, no. Again, not necessarily. There's all over the map. But what I have to do is I have to find the best option. Okay. And we also have to, at some point, we have to come to the realization is like, yes, 20 years ago, you could spin the ball. Okay. But you're totally different. Your body's different. Your swing's different. You're just in it. You're different. And so that's the hard part, right? Is that club maybe performed for a long stretch of time, but it start not to perform because you're changing, not the club.
Yeah. Maybe your swing's changing. So to wrap up, and this has been amazing, I hope you can answer this question or this set of questions. Mm-hmm. Actually, I know you can, because we're just going to keep it facts. You've done a lot of fittings this year.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of different players. We're about to come up on the golf season.
Yes.
The top three drivers, irons and wedges,
okay,
that you have ended up fitting people into, right? So I'm not going to ask you what's your favorite, what you're doing this. I'm going to say,
I don't even have a driver in the bag right now.
All right. Well, there you go. You've fit 1,000 people. What's the number one driver, second driver, third driver that people have gotten fit into? And the same with irons and wedges. What's been the ones this year?
I'm going to break this up a slight bit, but I'm going to answer this question. So first of all, because of the cycles that drivers are on. So for instance, like Ping, the G430
came out a little more early.
Yeah. The Titleist TSR that came out in 2022 and it's 2024. And the Titleist TSR lineup is still one of the best lineups.
Yeah.
I'm going to find something with loft. It's going to have ball speed. It's going to have forgiveness. I've got a shaft option. Titleist is absolutely in that top three.
Okay.
All right. I say Ping is also in that top three.
Okay.
Now Ping, they only have a new driver this year. It's the 10K. That's the max forgiveness.
It's very similar to last year's G430.
Well, the part of that too is that's a whole conversation about 10K, and that's a separate conversation in terms of technology. But let's just say, for instance, the Ping lineup. All right.
Yeah. Yeah, we can go lineups.
Yeah.
Brands, if you
will. I do think in terms of the next on that, I would absolutely put in the top three the AI Smoke Paradigm by Callaway.
I love this list because one, TaylorMade sound on it. That's the number one driver in everybody's bag. And it's okay. Not a bad thing.
No.
It's not a bad thing by any means. It's the power of marketing and what the, you know, guys on, like you said, on tour are playing.
Do you know how many times someone comes in and goes, well, I need to hit the TaylorMade driver because I'm a TaylorMade guy.
Yeah.
That's the easiest fitting in the world because I'm going to just get whatever the best TaylorMade it is.
For them. Yeah.
But that's okay.
If that's what they want.
I'm not working on extra money by getting you into TaylorMade.
Yeah.
In fact, none. We don't make any commission.
Yeah.
So this is the beauty of it. It's like, do I know that the TaylorMade's not always the best option? Yes. But if you're a one lane guy and you're a ping guy and you come in and you want ping,
You get to do whatever you want to do.
I'm just going
to
get you the best ping. The person that comes in, and I've done this a long time now. It's about 8 years in the fitting bay, but I've done this for almost 20 years, just fitting, repair work. If I put you into something that's better, I don't care what the name is. And if you're okay with that, and it's better. I was fortunate enough yesterday. I played golf and we're four holes in. I joined up with a threesome and we're four holes in. And I hadn't necessarily talked too much about what I do or anything like that. Really super nice guys. And we're on the tee box and the guy hits this really nice driver. And I said, oh, that's
Chamonix.
No. and he hits this driver and it's a really nice drive and it's high and it's got some distance to it. I said, that's awesome. That launch is perfect. He said, you know what? I got fitted at Second Swing and these clubs were like game changing for me. I dropped strokes off. I'm hitting it farther and higher and everything. I said, that's awesome. Did you get fitted in our store like Minnetonka or Minneapolis? And he said, I got fitted in Minneapolis. The guy's name was Tyler.
It was you at some point.
And he just kind of looks at me and I go, well, that's my name. And he goes, it was you.
That's funny.
And he had a lot of nice things to say. But the reality is that if I make this more enjoyable, I don't care what it is.
It's awesome. That's what Roth said. He said the same thing.
Yeah. And really, I look at the tendencies. So I see right now that Callaway is doing a really good job of maintaining ball speeds on miss hits. That's huge because ball speed really is the whole thing. You can get away with a little bit of launch and spin and a little bit of direction, but if you have ball speed,
yeah,
even on a miss hit,
I do lose ball speed with my ping and on a miss hit.
And that's not to say that ping's a bad club because
not at all.
Like, listen, I don't know who's going to win the Masters. No idea. But I'll guarantee you they're playing pretty much a Titleist, a Callaway, a ping or a TaylorMade. Because there's not a lot out on the tour that way. It could be a Cobra if Ricky wins.
Yeah,
that's about it.
He's not going to. I'm gonna call my shot here.
So Zalatoris
is winning this year.
Well, that's fine. He's a Titleist guy, but I think
and a lap golf guy. He is a Titleist guy.
Yeah. So, the other part of that too is you talk about irons. Okay. It's really categories to that. Okay. If you're a more consistent ball striker, you can get away with something that's maybe a smaller, but it's all about ball speed and launch. Then at that point. So for every swing you make with any club, including a putter, when it strikes the face, the loft of the club at the impact and the face angle determine the shot. That's what determines the shot.
Yeah.
So that's why we have different lofted clubs. And that's why we go right and left because the face is open or closed. Even the best players in the world go right and left. They almost always go the same distance. Mm-hmm. So that's one of the things that you look at and go, talk about irons. I'd say there's kind of cavity back. You're hitting it solid. You get something that has maybe a free floating face that allows you to maybe miss a little and still get some distance. That's okay. It's kind of a mid category. You get something that's a little bit bigger. Again, the weight may be a little bit farther back, gets the ball in the air. You may not hit it in the center, but in any of those categories, that's the hard part because there's not really a company that's making something better. They are all so incredibly solid. And we talked about this a little earlier. There's five or six versions of there's five or six models for every single company.
So then, I mean, what are the companies then? There's still got to be a top three.
Yeah. Okay.
That people get into, right? I'm going to guess it's Titleist, Ping and Callaway.
You know, Callaway has a great iron on the market. They're more the Apex lineup.
I've seen so many people playing the Apexes.
Yeah, but that's the old Apex, not the new ones.
Okay.
And I'm not sure where those are at. But I will say absolutely without question, you can take a Ping, a Titleist, and a Mizuno.
Yeah, man, Mizuno.
And you are good.
Yeah.
And the
very underrated brand in general.
Right. We did a fitter survey. We wanted to know kind of like the fitter's choices about what was winning last year in the Bay. And Sorixon was number two.
Wow.
As a choice. Titleist,
Brooksy,
Sorixon, and Ping.
Brooksy's a Sorixon.
As kind
guy,
of a 1-2-3. As like, but that's what we're seeing.
Yeah.
Right. And then you might come over to a guy who's really good at fitting and he for some reason has a run on TaylorMade irons and guys that just want to play TaylorMade, and that's how it goes.
770s, 790s, whatever.
Yeah. So the same in wedges. The big three is not even close right now on the market, and it's
Titleist.
It's Vokey. It's Titleist.
Really?
Yeah. It kind of has to be because they're.
I'm in TaylorMade wedges.
That's fine. Enough. That's fine.
I never hit the Vokey as well. I don't know why.
I would say, well, here's another example to that. I definitely put the Ping wedges in there, but nobody plays them.
Yeah. I've never even considered them, and I have Ping irons.
Their newest wedge, really good looking, very sharp. They're clean. They're compact. They're doing anything and everything that you can ask out of a wedge. But I say Vokey because Vokey is the number one sole. It's the number one played. You're going to find, excuse me, if you talk about in the bag and you talk about all these guys that are playing clubs, what's the one club they play regardless of who they're playing for?
The one club they play regardless on wedge?
Vokey wedges.
Vokey wedges.
Yeah, I don't care if
you're Titleist golf.
Yeah.
Ball. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't, you look up and down the bag. You go, oh yeah, he's a TaylorMade guy. Yeah. He still might even have Vokies in there.
Yeah.
That and putters tend to be the
speaks
one thing.
Volumes, right?
It really is. And so that's where you get a little bit more unique to that. But, I call Titleist number one and I call them number one, right? They do a great job. They're consistent. They're high level. They do a great job. So then I go to the other side of it, which is you could go Cleveland, you could go Ping, you could go TaylorMade, you go Callaway, you go Mizuno, make some incredible wedges to that.
There's only one that's in all three of those and it's Titleist.
Yeah. And that's it. And that's why. Because really, it's not that they're doing something better. It's just that they're making a lot of options. And it's trusted, and as soon as it gets trusted, and as soon as it gets marketed,
yeah, and it's consistent.
It's just
they've always been consistent.
Another thing, like with wedges, okay, the professionals never play chrome or black or nickel. They don't play with coatings, and this is something like even JP could talk to. He's got a raw finish.
Yeah, I got raw wedges
because what you can do with raw finishes totally different. I can grind it very more specific. I don't have to take the coating off of it. But you can also you can go to any one of these companies and they have that happen. They'll do custom stuff to that too. So, and then when it comes to, we won't even talk putters. Putters is so unique and so different.
It's all feel. It's all what you like.
Yeah, it is. It's if Larry will say this, cause Larry's a putting guru to this. If it looks good, it gives you confidence and it's going in the hole, we're done.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, regardless of whatever numbers you want to look at, if I'm rolling it and I'm putting it in more often than I'm not, I'm okay. You know, and I have the exact same putter and all of a sudden I miss a bunch of putts one day. It's not the putter.
Happens. It's the game.
You know, go back to that statement I made earlier. It's like, as soon as the ball leaves the club face, the environment takes over.
100%.
So when we talk about putting, you're on grass, it's bumpy, it's imperfect. Yeah. It's a round ball. You got a flat object. So
could hit something. Yeah. There's so many variables in putting.
Yeah. I would say that as it comes across, what's one of the companies that hits all the markets? Well, there's actually kind of two for that.
Titleist
and Ping.
I was going to say TaylorMade, but yeah.
I mean, Ping comes across as being a great product.
100%. PLD, so, putting lab design. Yeah.
Everything. But you have to come in and get a fitting. You have to come in because I think more than anything, there's two things I can guarantee you with a fitting. Okay. You're going to learn something. And you're going to get exercise.
Yeah, that's fair.
Right.
Good way to exercise.
And so what I look at is we talk about science is always really a little tricky to things because we talk about myths, what's real, what's not real, you know, and the same thing kind of applies as you get into the golf clubs. And it's really kind of a scientific element is how does this work? What does this do? Well, it's all physics. But then it's also all anatomy and physiology. It's also the environment, you know, hot, cold, up, down, left, right.
It's an unpredictable game.
Yeah.
It's the reason that we all love it and are right. so obsessed with it.
Yeah. And golf, golf is what you make of it, not what someone else makes of it.
Yeah, 100%.
It's not that someone else says, well, dude, this is the driver for you. Well, that'd be nice. It's like people giving you swing advice. Like if you don't know my swing, if you see me swing one time.
Yeah, don't tell me what to
no.
do.
No.
Yeah.
Right? If
I see people for that.
Right. And even for that matter, how many times have you gone out with your coach and actually played golf?
Yeah, less than five.
Okay. So they're seeing you, what you do on the range, hitting a couple balls in a row.
Yeah.
That's totally different than when you get outside.
100%.
And that's where like, if you're going to do something, get a guy or a gal, there's great teachers out there, and schedule a playing lesson.
Play lesson, play nine holes or whatever.
Or it could be three holes. It could be four holes. It's like, we're just going to play a couple holes here. We're going to talk about it. We're going to see this. We're going to try to put this to action.
Yeah.
So.
Well, this has been amazing, man. I'm sorry that you weren't the first guest. hopefully you're not going to be the last. Hopefully we continue to go and
you'll be
I
good.
Appreciate you making the,
we'll get meat sauce in
the
here.
Hike out here. And yeah, right? I'd love to get meat sauce out here.
We'll get meat sauce in.
Might be a 5-hour podcast. I can't wait for it.
Oh my gosh. You know what? Really good dude.
Yeah.
Just really, really genuine too. And fun. And we
have Zinger on. I got a lot of people in the hopper. We just did the new logo. Goodness. We're doing a little rebrand. We're, kickstarting stuff again and getting into it and just like, you know, how you got into what you do. Like this is all a hobby and a passion and we love doing it. And it's fun having these combos.
You know what we do at Independent Golf Reviews is also the same sort of thing. We try to present what happens, what we see, what we think, what we feel, and just leave you with an opportunity
to
maybe learn a little bit more about that. Yeah. You know, I think back on these conversations with like I said, I got engineers from every company, you know, in my phone. I text them, call them, email them. They're never shy about saying, hey, this is what I think. And the reality is like, it's a collection. You can come to me. How many fitters you been to?
Oh God, I can't count.
Yeah, been me, Roth. Have you done with Larry? Cam?
I've done Larry. I've done Cam. I've seen random people.
We're all different. However, our goal is the same. Can I make you better? Can I help you enjoy this game for whatever you have? And I don't care if it's new, it's used, it doesn't matter to us. Yeah. Like the reality is, you know, can I make you better?
Yeah.
And that's what
play golf, have fun, care less.
Yeah.
Have a good time.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, sir.
And stay razor sharp. Yes.
We'll do it again.
Keep the grooves sharp. Yeah. Right.
I got my sharpeners in my bag.
All right. Good.
Thank you, Tyler.
You're
appreciate
welcome.
It.
Yeah. Great to be here.